Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Josh Brown, me and you disagree on almost every single thing when it comes to video games, but we're still good morally individual people.
I hope so. I do love you. No matter what kind of gaming habits you might have, I always will love you, Scott Silford.
Even to disagreeing right now before we hit the record button on iced coffee. Well, can't even bring that in.
You know what? I don't want to delay the juicy topics we're about to dive into, but this is the worst season for me, right? Because I can't function without caffeine, but I don't like iced coffee. So in this heat, I'm in this podcast studio with a hot coffee right now. And I'm in a bad way.
You're the real hot coffee scandal.
I'm seeing through time and space. I really am. And I wish I loved iced coffee. I really
so
do.
Good.
My girlfriend loves it. I try all of hers. And it's just that I think I don't like coffee. I think that's my issue. I like the warmness in my tum-tum that I get from drinking a hot coffee. And I like the syrups and I like the milk. But I don't like it cold. I don't know, man. Don't know what's going on with me.
You should get a decaf. The less coffee flavor.
But
I guess it's the same flavor, but less oomph.
It's like less caffeine, right? And the reason I drink it is for the caffeine, so I don't know what's going on.
I don't know, but I'm a massive endorser of the coffee stuff, which is to say, in no way at all, we're very much suffering from the heat, that we're going to do a debate on gaming habits. Things that we've realized after living with each other in a work-based capacity, that we have various different habits and different ways of approaching the video game industry. We mind our WhatsApp chat, we looked at the different times that we disagreed on stuff, and we're just going to go through some things. Number one being the big dip / no dip life.
Of course.
Which I love having a variety of games on the go. I love having something that might be more multiplayer based or more casual based. And I will view that as a bridge between the bigger games. So like right now, I just finished Resident Evil 4 last night, but I'm also playing Street Fighter 6. And I'm also going through Final Fantasy 6 on Switch, which is my train game. I play a game on the train on the way in and the way out of work. And I also started Diablo 4 last night. So I've nearly always got about 3 or 4 games on the go. Also Batboy.
This is it. We've talked about the big dip life versus the bubbling life before, but I think right now, at this moment in the year, it's more pertinent than ever because of all the games you just mentioned there that you're playing and all the games that are about to come out. I couldn't believe at the start of this week when you told me you had started Diablo 4 without finishing those other games that you'd played and going and intending to buy Final Fantasy 16 next week. If there's a game that long, it like gives me genuine anxiety to start it knowing I can't finish it. Zelda was bad enough. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get through that. And when I only played 25 hours over the first 2 weeks or whatever, I was genuinely, but for a game like that, you know, with a game like Final Fantasy on the horizon, I wondered if I was going to be able to fit it in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bad way to be, because like I am so wrapped up in needing to finish games or needing to get the most out of games before I move on, that it kind of sometimes makes the final stretch of those games unenjoyable, because I almost want it to be done because I want to clear the slate before the next thing comes along. So that's definitely my perspective on it, but I don't think it's the right perspective because it's led to a lot of issues.
No, um, I I would say that like it's rare for me that I want want a game to end. It's like I remember having that with Uncharted 4. I remember thinking the back like third of Uncharted 4 just would not effing end.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I think when a game sort of feels like it's building to something and then doesn't, that can be brilliant if it feels like it's a getting more bang for your buck, more value for money or whatever. But sometimes if the pacing is pointing to a logical closure point and they blow right past it,
yeah.
It just feels like blow to you. Now you got to go find these three keys to get through the door where the villain is, and I'm just like, oh my god, just end. That's a rare feeling, but I mean, something like Resident Evil 4, having just finished that, the remake, that's like perfectly paced.
It is.
Like the original was too, but yeah.
But it's funny you mentioned Resident Evil 4. This is why I wanted to revisit the Big Dip life in this podcast, because there's an extra wrinkle to it, and that's that the dip doesn't mean just the games that you're playing right now. That could mean returning to a game that you picked up months ago and played a few hours of, and now you're returning to. That's something that I know my brain can't do, and that's why I don't like stopping games and moving on to something else, because I knew in my bones if I'd stop Tears of the Kingdom to play something else and a month went by or two months went by, there was no way I was going to go back to it, because there's just something, when I'm out of the flow of a game, when I'm out of the rhythm of a game, I find it almost impossible to get back in.
Well, I the thing is with Resident Evil 4, I started that, because that dropped, like, I think 3 or 4 days, I think it was on the Friday, and I went to Japan on, like, the Monday.
Yeah.
And then I was in Japan for, like, 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it was. Just a full disconnect from Western life. It was beautiful. I'd recommend it. But coming back to that, I was like, what do I even do? What even is my life? Where do I live? What do I do? And Resident Evil 4 was one of them where I was like, oh yeah, Resident Evil 4. And like, oh shit, yeah, that's a thing. And I just sort of didn't hook me. I'd done it up until like the lake section. There's a whole bit in the remake where it's way more fleshed out in terms of giving you a boat and you can explore more and whatever. I'd done all that stuff. So I was like, I don't know, 4 hours, 5 hours in or something?
Yeah.
And actually, I think it was more like 7 or something. Anyway, and I'd done that stuff. And so like, I just couldn't get back to that at that time. I was just forcing it too much. It wasn't enjoyable, whatever. And then it was only been recently where I was like, no, this is madness. I've got Diablo 4. I want to play that. Final Fantasy 16 is out in a week. There's a demo that's 2 hours long. I want to do all that stuff. I also wanted to bank Final Fantasy 6 before I go into 16.
Yeah.
Because I've never finished Final Fantasy 6, and the Pixel Remaster is really gorgeous. So I was like, I'll go through all these different things, dipping into all these different games. But I did manage to resume Resident Evil 4 eventually. It was just a case of like sticking with it enough. And then everything kind of clicked again.
Well, that was it. Like, I was genuinely imploring you to either start again or just sack it off completely, because you had those moments where you came back and you were trying to get back into it, but obviously you'd been away for so long, the pacing was kind of off, you weren't really interested in, well, not interested, you weren't vibing with the mechanics at that point either, if I recall.
I think that game kicks into a whole other gear when you get to the castle.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah, it definitely, like, the castle section is absolutely great, but I wondered every time you jumped back into it and did like a little bit of a section, I just thought, he's never going to get there. But then you did and proved me wrong completely, and now I'm so pleased you stuck with it and did not listen to my advice to sack it off.
Same in that regard, in terms of actually getting through it, Resident Evil 4 is clearly one of the games of the year. It doesn't be Street Fighter 6 for me, but it is way up there. But it's also like, you know, it's, well, the thing is, on the industry side, I always think that games could do a much better job of, like, in a PR term would be onboarding, but like re-onboarding you into a game. If you pick up an RPG, you pick up Elden Ring after like 40 hours or something.
Yeah.
I kind of think any game that has a really long runtime should have a way of ingratiating you back into the game, like a little sort of, almost like the Animus sections in Assassin's Creed, like some sort of disconnected thing. There's, okay, these are your moves, this is what's happening in the story, and this is where you left off, and just kind of just let you back in, like, you know, like a recap kind of thing. Because so precious few games do that. Dragon Quest XI does. It gives you like a text version of what's happened to that point. And I just think something like that would be more helpful, because I don't know how many people, I'm curious, I don't know if the average person tries to make a point of going through one game at a time.
Right.
Like completion day, I would assume that they don't. Most people just seem to live the dip life and finish very little.
Okay.
there was a whole thing from Kotaku, I think it was back in 2014, where it was like 90% of people don't finish their games. And that might have changed over time, but overall, I wonder, especially with the likes of Game Pass and archive services and stuff, if people are just dipping into more things and then not, like, you know, not making a point of finishing anything.
The issue with kind of getting re-caught up on the stuff that you were previously familiar with is the main issue for me. Like, even playing, and I've talked about it on the podcast, you know, Horizon Burning Shores earlier this year, that's an end game piece of content. It assumes you're familiar with the mechanics, but I hadn't touched that game in a year, and I was getting my ass handed to me by all of these machines because I knew the basics, but games now escalate and they stack powers so much that the end game experience you almost take for granted because you know all of the intricacies, you know all of the shortcuts, you know how best to tackle certain encounters. But I find that information just leaves me as soon as I stop a game. And that's kind of what stops me from going back to things more so than, you know, where I am in the story or what's going on with the world. It's that kind of mechanical flow, because the sense of mechanical escalation in a game is one of the most important things that I look for. Resident Evil has it in spades. That's why I loved it so much. The way that game ramps up, the way it gives you more power, how you level up your weapons and become more familiar with the enemies and the combat experience. And if I break that, that's the main issue for me going back to things, I find. And I wonder when you said there about like the completion data does support that people don't finish games. I wonder if that's because they're dipping into a bunch of different games or whether because games have become so big that they kind of stick with one for a little while, play it over a series of months, get bored, then move on to the next thing. I wonder if they're dipping between a bunch of games at once, or they're kind of just not finishing games because they've gotten so big and then moving on because it's been so long. I don't know.
I think like if Kotaku or whoever were to do that again, and we can always do a community poll or something for it as well, I think that consumer habits will have changed because of the price point, because of the entry point. I mean, I know my own, like my brother-in-law, like he picks up like a couple of games a year at this point because they're £70 a go, and then spends as much time as possible in them, whether it's Elden Ring or Horizon, just to get as much out of it as possible. But that whole idea of like, you know, like when to resume a game and when to restart it. Like, have you actively restarted stuff? I've never, because I view that as wasted time. If I was like Resident Evil 4, I was like, well, that's 7 to 8 hours that I've just wasted. Like, I would rather pick it up and see if I can, something in the game makes it more manageable.
I always, before you hit a certain threshold, like I played, for instance, Jedi Survivor, and then momentarily hit a bug that corrupted one of my save files.
Oh, yeah.
And I was about 15 hours in, and there would be no way I would restart that game at that moment in time. Maybe in a year or maybe in 2 years after I'd gotten over that loss of data. But if there's a game that I've not touched, outside of its first hour or two in a few months, I'd just restart the whole thing. I'd just go from the beginning and refamiliarize myself that way. It's why I don't play demos.
Right.
And it's why, honestly, this is such a bad omission to make on a podcast like this when, you know, I've got this lovely job and I get all of this access to games. But it's why I don't necessarily like previews either when we get the option to go down and preview a game, because I know I'm going to have to play that section again. Yeah. And that was the good thing about getting Dead Island 2 when we got the preview for that. Mm. Jules and I were thankfully, very gratefully, from my perspective, obviously, we were grateful to get invited to play that game early. And when we got the final code for review, the data carried over, so we didn't have to start again. But even then, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I would have liked to have started again, because now I'm a few months out. You can't win with me, man. I'm a very, what would you even call it? Selfish, I think, is the word.
Well, I think it's just very particular. I think the whole thing is you're always trying to maintain a certain level of excitement around games, and the more you cover them, the more you're exposed to the pre-launch and the run-up, and like that surprise is fundamentally picked away because, but then I mean I enjoy all that stuff, so I think like the run-up is always like, we talked about this on a previous wind-up of like, it's not real until it's real. So it's like if we've been covering something for a couple of years and then it's finally showing off, it's like, oh my god, okay, it was real, oh my god, that's the reveal trailer, oh my god, that's what that character actually does look like, or whatever it is. So I quite like that stuff. But in terms of restarting games, I would never do that. It would just be wasted time. But
this extends to every single part of my life. I talk about TV a lot in this podcast, weirdly enough, because I find my habits with TV are pretty similar to my habits with games. Mm. Like, I don't like watching, as you're probably sick of hearing, I don't like watching TV shows while they air.
Yeah, this is another one. You've got so many little things, and little rules, but they definitely benefit you. It's just that when you say them, I'm like, that's not what anyone else does.
That's it, man. It's just the way I like to kind of consume media. Like, I don't watch TV shows while they air. One, because I don't know if they're going to justify my time with a bad ending like Game of Thrones or something. I need to know something is complete or in the process of being complete. Like, I jumped on Succession at the start of season 4 knowing that season was going to be the final ones, because I was like, hey, there's my runway, there's my way out, there's everything going to be wrapped up in a bow by the end, let's jump in now. But
to be fair, just super quick, like that's my approach to early access stuff, because it doesn't have an ending yet and I don't know if it's worth it, so why would I pay you for half a game?
Exactly, that's also my thing. Like, I don't want to, like the Cyberpunk thing recently, sorry I'm going off on a bunch of tangents, but I was a little bit resentful and a little bit annoyed that I loved playing Cyberpunk 2077, but the version imagine that's about to exist with Phantom Liberty, with all of the overhauls to the regular base game.
To everything,
to everything. Like, I'm jealous and annoyed I didn't wait and play that version, because that version would be even better, presumably, judging on what they're changing. And that's kind of frustrating. It's kind of the same with the TV show thing, where if I watched season one and then I came back the year afterwards to watch season two, I just wouldn't be into it as much, because a year's gone by, I'd have forgotten a bunch of things. That's how I watched Better Call Saul, which is such a details-orientated show. Like, it's so specific in its storytelling and what it shows you, that I remember waiting between season three and season four, and then watching season four and kind of not enjoying it as much, because I couldn't remember all the details, I couldn't remember all the character stories. And I enjoyed that show much more, even more than I already did when I rewatched it all up until the final season, and then rolled the final season straight into my rewatch. Yeah. So everything was fresh, and I was kind of bubbling it in that way. That's how I like to consume things. Otherwise, my brain just forgets it, man. We're exposed to so much media that my brain's only got enough room for a finite amount.
No, well, that was how we kind of came up with the term of bubbling with something, like creating like a sphere of something around you. I think it's an offshoot of the MCU. I think that's the way that everything with the MCU, 2007 onwards or 2008, whenever Iron Man was, has trained us to assume a level of canon and consistency between media that is largely not there and was never there, because most of those installments, if you bring it back to game sequels, were never planned that many in advance anyway. But there is something to either, you call it bubbling with a certain franchise, play everything in a row or whatever it is, that is quite satisfying and does give it that like through line. It's like this phantom through line of like, oh, well, this became this. I can see how this idea evolved. And it's like, well, that was never planned, but like it does feel good that way.
Yeah.
I think for story stuff, it's like if I'm picking up a save for an RPG 70 hours in, like Persona 5, I've never finished, but I'm like 90 hours into that game. And every year or so, I go back to it and do a little bit more. I did a little bit when I came back from Japan, because there's some areas in that that I went to in real life. And so it's one of those things where I mean, that game is like simple enough in terms of what's happening, but I'll just get lost in recap videos. Like if talking about picking up saves, something that's more story based, chances are if it's got a good story hook, that's the one thing I would see through.
Right.
Because I'll clarify with the whole dip thing, I want to experience as many games as possible, and then I'll just see what hooks me.
Yeah.
And it's like we've talked about it before, but it's like a subconscious test thing. And I'll just realize a week later that I've not thought about something, or it'll be the thing that I just mainline. Like Sifu, last year, I just absolutely devoured that thing. It was just like straight all the way through. I absolutely loved it. And same with Street Fighter 6. Like, I'm just like, well, that's like my bridge game in between other things, but I cannot get enough of Street Fighter 6. I'm forcing myself off it because I know that there's other stuff with stories that I can get through. So I'm always like, experience as much as possible and then see what hooks me. And then something feels like it will pay off, I'll see it all the way through. But like, I think I get your side of like wanting to see stuff, make a point of like one by one by one.
Yeah.
But then you also had it with Crisis Core where you were like, I can tell this isn't actually going to be worth my time.
Oh, totally. I must admit, like in terms of my own self-improvement, I become way better at calling it quits. Like,
right.
I don't mind binning off a game. That doesn't give me anxiety in the same way as taking a break from a game I like does, because I've already kind of killed it. Like, trading in Far Cry 6 after playing 10 hours
right.
I was like, okay, that's not going to give me any anxiety. I'm not going to think about what I've missed from that game, because in my head, I've cut it off.
Mm.
But it's only when I haven't cut something off and it is lingering and I know it is there to finish, that's kind of when I get a little bit stressed out, because I just, for whatever reason, just can't do what you do. Like the idea, I literally laughed when you told me you were getting back into Persona 5, because I was thinking like there would be no way I could do that.
Right.
When you first started that game like years ago,
I think it's a thing with, because that was 2017, like that was like three generations of What Culture Presenters ago, and that was one of Ben Potter's favorite games. But like, yeah, that thing, it's like with Persona is an IP, is like with me most of the time anyway. I'm listening to the music, I'm looking at the artwork, like it's just, I don't know, it's kind of always there. Like, so it's, and again, like it's quite a simple story, so I feel like it's quite easy to dip in and out. Like, and it doesn't really work with many other, like, I don't think something like Final Fantasy 16, assumedly, based on how meaty that thing, meatily that thing opens, I don't think you could put that down for like 6 years and then come back to it.
Yeah.
But something like Persona 5, more 5 than 4, it feels like you can dip in and out.
Well, I mean, you know, we're talking about RPGs and stuff here. My reference point would be Skyrim. People have been playing that game for 12 years at this point, and they always go back to it. When a new version comes out, they go and they play it. I played Skyrim to death when it came out, like 100 hours-ish of it. I know that's not really to death for a lot of people, but for me at the time, 100 hours was a lot of time to spend on one game.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not gone back to it since, despite how much I loved it. I played the remastered version on PlayStation 4 for about 15 hours, but because I can't go back to the save that I had, like, I mean, I can, the save is there, but I don't want to, and I would get no enjoyment from that. Every time I think about playing Skyrim, it would be from the beginning. It would be right. from going back to the start and having that master save again. I love master saves. I love being able to just have play one thing all the way through, kind of with that original loop. It's why I never played a game on New Game Plus until very recently. Like, every time I would replay Resident Evil 4, and I have replayed the original version of Resident Evil 4 so much, it's never the New Game Plus. It's never with the kind of infinite ammo weapons or the unlockable weapons. It's always from the start, always with the same kind of trajectory and unlocks and loop, like the original version, the theatrical experience, not the director's cut, for lack of a better term. Whatever reason, my brain isn't wired to just kind of revisit things and kind of have a little dabble or continue that. If I'm going into something, I need it top to bottom. I need the full thing in my head.
Oh, mine's like fresh. It's recap videos. It's like, let me get back up to speed. I'll remember enough, and then I'll go back and watch like a recap thing, and just sort of. I'm always like, I want to pick up where I left off. Like I view it as like wasted time if I have to redo the whole thing, because then enough of it will come back to me, and then I've lost that save now, and I can't. I don't know. I'll always try and find a way to just keep going. Let's talk about some other just things that we just sort of wrote down. One of yours is no demos, which is kind of part of your like. Sometimes you want to just like stay away from a game's marketing and try and have it as like a first experience when it launches. But you fundamentally stay away from demos, which I think is nuts because there are so many great demos right now. Lies of P, Final Fantasy 16.
I think it's nuts to... Well, it's not nuts to play a demo, but with something like Final Fantasy 16, with something like Lies of P, with a bunch of other games that have had demos in the past, if I know I'm already going to buy it and I'm already going to play it...
How'd you know, though?
Because you just know. There are some games that you just know you're going to get. At least for me. Right. I say this like everyone's the same as me. I'm quickly realizing nobody is the same as me.
In a beautiful way.
You know, I don't know about that. but yeah, if I know I'm going to play a game, and sometimes I just know I'm going to play a game because it's just so my thing. Uh-huh. It's interesting. And even if the reviews aren't good, I'm now confident enough in my tastes that I know that I want to try something, even if it's not a 10 out of 10, because it has elements that I like and I want to see if they're done well or if they're not done well. And that's enough for me to justify a purchase.
But you don't want that little taste of it now thing.
No.
Which is like, I think that's because it's so much fun to do that. Like, why not play the thing you're looking forward to now?
Here's the thing. To me, it is anti-fun because, and I'll tell you why, another bit of madness coming your way. If I'm looking forward to something that much to the point where I won't look at anything and I won't play it and I know I'm just going to get
even
it.
Even that as a sentence is nuts. But carry on. I'm looking forward to it so much that I won't look at it.
Well, it's because I want that experience fresh and I want it all concentrated. I want it when I'm at my peak motivated to play it, when my interest is the highest.
Right.
So I want to kind of savor the moment almost, right? So even if a game comes out on a Friday night that I've been looking forward to for 5 years.
This is another one of yours, which is waiting to play.
Yeah, say a Last of Us Part 2 or a Red Dead Redemption 2. And both of these games I did this with, I had the code, I had the game, and I waited. The Friday night, I was busy, you know, I was doing something else, I had other plans.
Cancel it.
Yeah. Oh,
I would have cancelled whatever was on.
Dinner or something. Or maybe I just wasn't mentally feeling, you know, well enough. Maybe it was a long day at work, maybe I was tired. Like, that game, I'm not playing that game in that state, because in my head, it's like, the game deserves more.
Yes.
Like, I've been looking forward to this for 5 years, or whatever it is. I can wait another day or two. I can wait another day until my head's in the right place, until I'm feeling good about it, until I can't wait to open it. And I'd always wait for that moment rather than getting a taste of it. I don't know why. Oh. I've always been like that. And the same with movies and stuff as well, man.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. You have immaculate self-control. I can't do that. Like, I'm just like, if I've been looking forward to a thing, I am counting down the minutes until it's available. I will play it at midnight. I will put 2 or 3 hours into it, and I'll go to bed at 3 a.m. for every single thing that I give a remote F about. That's just what I do. Like, and I've loaded up games where I'm half asleep or whatever, and I'm just like, but the rush of the thing will wake you up anyway or whatever it is.
That's true.
I'm talking about midnight slots in that regard, but if we're talking about like an evening launch, I can't wait to get home from work so I can play something. I'm never putting it off. It's the first thing I do. Like, I get home, I play a bit of it. Maybe I have to take a break to eat something like an idiot, and then I can get back to the game again.
Well, this is what I find really interesting, right? Because I tried a few midnight launches back in the day. I went to get GTA 5 at midnight, got Fallout 4 at midnight, got got Star Wars Battlefront 1 at midnight. Midnight, the
Some
DICE version.
Day we should do our best midnight launches for a chatty or something.
Yes, yeah. But here's the thing. I always found the thrill of buying the game way better than coming home and playing the game because I never wanted just that taste of it. I wanted the full thing. I don't want just an hour or two at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, I think it's fun.
I realized this. I'd always rather take the next day off work and play it for a full 8 hours than I ever would playing it for 2 hours the night before.
Do you know what it is, right? This is the reminding me of what my dad used to say. When this is the wrestling pay-per-view mentality.
Okay.
And I would rather stay up late and watch it 1 a.m. till 5 a.m. with everybody, quote unquote, with everybody else, even though they're not in the room or anything. But you know you're watching it live. You know you're getting, you're part of that first wave of everybody experiencing it for the first time. Like Death Stranding. Like you're, everyone's connected without actually being connected. I love that feeling and that energy so, so much, especially on like Twitter and social media and all the different reactions. And, oh my God, have you seen this? I love that stuff. My dad would always say, well, why don't you just tape it and watch it in the morning?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's not as exciting, Dad.
I wonder if this is because we're old men, and I love saying that this podcast.
If you're old, like, I'm dead. Yeah. I'm a monument.
What I mean by that is, like, media is so, has changed so much over the past, you know, even 10 years to the point where I think a lot of people's viewing habits and even the discourse habits, for lack of a better term, they've like completely changed and they're more fractured than ever. Like I used to love staying up to watch Game of Thrones or The Walking Dead or whatever it was live because you knew everyone else would be.
Yeah.
And total anecdotally from the presence online from these shows, but I just don't know if anyone does that anymore.
But there's not any shows like that right now.
But even when we're watching showcases, right? PlayStation showcases and stuff, people used to, when it was E3 season, even as little as a few years ago, my Twitter would be full of people live tweeting it, like reacting to it in real time. Mm. And now I have one or two people who will make one or two tweets, and it's like, that's all I get. And
you said you don't follow that many gaming people. Like, that's my feed. Like,
No, but here's the thing, right? Mm. I mean, yeah, I don't follow many gaming people, but those showcases used to penetrate gaming people and go into just the regular people I follow who only had a casual interest in gaming. Even they would watch like the Sony showcases on E3 and they would react to them. I don't even get that anymore.
Mm.
It's an anecdotal thing, right? I watch Love Island every year, which is a dating show that's on every night over the summer. And even that, man, I've noticed like the drop off. That used to have this like community who used to log on every night and they would live tweet the episodes. And I'm watching it this year and it's a pretty good season. And again, there's like one or two people tweeting about it.
Right.
And I find like, you know, the likes of Succession, which I also loved, like I obviously had a dedicated online fandom. But I wonder if our media consumption habits are so disparate these days that we will more often than not get to it when we get to it and know that the discussion is always going to be there. For me, that has definitely changed. And it is a shame because I used to be ravenous to do it live like you did, but now I just don't feel the need.
Well, I don't know, because I do think it's healthier to do it when you feel right. No, you take your time and then experience something in your own time. I definitely, my time is whenever it's available. That's what I love. Like like right now I'm counting down the minutes until Final Fantasy 16 is available, and I'm going back and forth because of the master save thing on doing the rest of the demo and then, you know, going into the full release or whatever, or just wanting to wait. And then that's the stupid thing. Everything I've said so far, I would restart. Like, they're telling me that you can carry over your save onto Final Fantasy 16 because it is final code. It's just the beginning 2 hours of the game. But in my head, because of just, I don't know, whatever feeling, I want to do a master save. I want to start properly next week and go all the way through on the finished game, even though it's finished code anyway. But yeah, I think having self-control and knowing, you know, not letting the game dictate or the movie dictate, like, you know, like you waited until recently to see Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Whereas, like, I saw that on the day earlier. It was like a preview screening, like on the Thursday before the Friday release. I'll always take things as soon as they're out. Like, it's just, I don't know, that's just one thing that I love hoovering up.
I guess, even because I'm just an anxious person, I just need to know I'm going to enjoy the situation that I'm in while I'm watching or playing something. Like, Spider-Verse is a perfect example. That was pretty much indicative of all of my viewing / playing / consuming habits. Mm. I didn't watch any trailers, didn't even know the basic premise of that movie, didn't watch it day one, avoided all spoilers, avoided everything, didn't know who was in it, didn't know what the hell it was about. Mm. And then I waited a week or two to go see it. I went to the Metro Center, which, a reference to people who don't know what that is, it's like a shopping mall that's outside of town on a super hot day when I knew no one would be there, in a screening no one was in, on a work day, because I took the time off to go see it. And then I went to see it pretty much in an empty theater on my own, and it was perfect, man.
Yeah.
Like, it was the perfect experience. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. Mm. And you don't always get to see, you know, manipulate the elements in that way, but when it pays off, oh, that was gorgeous, man.
You definitely have a thing where it's like, if experiencing media is like a Venn diagram and it's all one big hole in the middle, you're really good at like separating, like, no, this is for me. This one, I'm taking this away from this hole, and this one's my little thing, and I'm going to like delay it. I'm going to watch it at a specific time of day, or I'm going to like get some specific snacks in, or I'm going to do whatever, and that's my thing, and like, and it, and you make it yours, and like, I like the fact that it is part of that whole. Right. If anything, I kind of miss it. I miss, like you mentioned before, like when it felt like, you know, everyone was watching a show, I miss that. I when Elden Ring came around and everyone was playing Elden Ring,
yeah.
I wish it was that for more stuff.
Right.
Like I miss that overall. So I definitely like when there's even if anything even close to a hole forming around anything, I will take. Yeah. So like, I love that, but I think that's the core thing that we not necessarily disagree on, but you just prefer like separate stuff.
No, I think you're spot on. Like for me, I've noticed as the years go by, like how much of a personal thing media is for me. Like it's a me thing, and it's like you said, I will sometimes not watch a telly show until I've got the right snacks in, until I made the right move.
Nighttime, the ambient
right
light.
Yeah, yeah, nighttime, ambient light. Like it's when I'm the most in the zone. It's when I'm the most comfortable, and that's how I like to, you know, that's just me, I suppose. And it's where I feel like the most like me.
Mm.
And it's where I feel like I said, the most natural. So I will always wait to kind of seize that moment, because I realize as I get older, man, I don't care what people think about stuff. Like, I like that there's the discourse happening, but when I was younger, man, like, and I say that like I'm ancient, but like when I was in university or something, or even at the early days of this job, I always thought that I had to be the loudest voice in the room.
Right, yeah.
Which is ironic, because I always feel like I'm bloody taking the mic from you in this podcast.
No.
And waxing lyrical.
I think every teenager has that, because it's like, yeah, I matter, I have my opinions. Like, exactly. That's everyone goes through that stuff.
Exactly. It's like I need people to know that I know. I need people to know that I'm smart, that I know about this stuff.
Yes.
And I did 4 years at university in film school, and I've got the credentials.
Mise en scène, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. That I know what I'm talking about. I want to be part of the conversation. I want people to like me, whatever. And like, as the years go on, I just kind of realize that, and I'm kind of grateful I had this realization, but I was like, I'm not going to get anything from that.
No.
Like, that doesn't interest me anymore, and that's why I like talking to like a specific amount of people about the stuff I like. I love nothing more than playing something with you,
yeah,
and talking about it on this podcast or in our DMs or in person.
Mm-hmm.
I love it with my girlfriend. I love it with Adam Nicholas. I love it with a bunch of other people in this office in my home life. But like random Joe on Reddit, I'm less interested in them than I was 10 years ago.
I think, for me, it's like I'm not posting on anything, but I do like those wider conversations. Like I love like like wrestling Reddit pages, like, because I love AEW, so I'm following the AEW page or the Squared Circle page, although I think I might have shut down. But I love those wider communal conversations. I like knowing what the talking points are or what people are gravitating towards, and watching everybody react to Tears of the Kingdom, because obviously I had that early for launch and I beat it in a week at like 70 or whatever hours it was in that first week to hit credits.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And then watching everybody get to those moments and react, and I think that's fun. I definitely love the communal interaction with media. I definitely love being part of that, even if it's from like a satellite perspective. Like, I'm not leaving comments on, like I said, social media pages, Reddit threads, whatever it is, YouTube comments. I'm not engaging that way, but I do love seeing it all happen. I think it's just like, yeah, like I said, like hoping for more holes around stuff. Like I said, the last time it happened, unless I'm forgetting anything, was Elden Ring, where it felt like just everybody was talking about it. Zelda, to some degree, had like random people, either it was like family members, friends, or people in the office just being like, oh my god, you've played it, isn't it any good? Like, it just, it was that thing that you said, like it permeated, it punched through a little bit. I just like that. I like that video games as a if video games are a conversation, then like when it's more people taking part, I love that.
Don't get me wrong, like, I love that as well. You know, we talk about it all the time about how those big events that rally everyone are good. I think just in terms of my interaction with that big event has changed, where I can, you know, separate myself from the circle for a little bit, play it in my own time, and then return to the circle. I know that conversation is still going to be there.
Yeah.
And it's just thrilling for me these days to kind of re-enter that discourse and figure out what everyone's been saying. And like I said, I realized that I don't have to add to it anymore. I can just like look at it and go, that's so cool that everyone's talking about that. Let's see what they're thinking about. This is what I thought over here, and now I'm going to contrast that with the popular opinion or whatever.
There's always ways to do it as well. I mean, we fundamentally make gaming news videos like nearly every other day. Although there's no news at the minute. That's why we're talking about this stuff.
It's like a paradox, right? It's like there's almost too much news to the point where like you kind of covered it all, and then there's no news. It's like these peaks and troughs. It's like these conferences, he's nothing.
Yeah, there's tons of showcases right now for the summer 2023, and there are tons of like little things happening. Like, oh, there's deals happening over here, but nothing that is like fun to talk about, which is usually our bar for the gaming news. That's be it worthwhile for me and you to talk about it. Speaking of worthwhile to talk about, let's talk about side quests and main quests. Probably the last thing we'll talk about, because we're slowly running out of time. But this is a whole thing that I think I feel what game we were both playing where it kind of came to light that you talk to NPCs, you make a point of like, you know, you'll comb like a whole area and then you'll move on like chunk by chunk by chunk. And my wife does that too. I don't do that. I don't even really think about it. It's not one thing or the other. It's just hovering around the idea of like a through line purpose to the game. So it's like, I might talk to NPC, I might do a couple of side quests, but what's the next main hook thing? And so like, I can't get too lost in side quest stuff unless the game is fundamentally built that way, kind of more like a Dead Island or more like Diablo 4, where it's like, just take side quests, get loot, do whatever. That is almost the main thrust. But if there's some sort of story to resolve, I want a little bit of that every now and then. And there's like a subconscious bit of me that sort of kicks in going like, you should really do a main quest mission now. You've done too many side things. And I have that where I can't do too many side things without progressing the main thing.
My issue with this comes from the fact that once a main quest in a game is done, my interest in the game is almost gone entirely. Right. And I've tried it before. I know myself. I know that once that final mission finishes and the credits roll, I'm not going to finish the side missions, because it almost feels like that's not part of the canonical journey that character is on anymore, which sounds really weird.
Right.
But if you take Jedi Survivor as an example, for instance, I knew that I would have to mop almost everything up, because once I hit the credits and once that journey was done, everything I was doing outside of that would feel almost without motivation or without drive. And I don't know why that is, but it was proven, because the only thing I had left to do in that game was finish the bounty hunter stuff.
Funnily enough, that's apparently been patched now, today. We're recording this on Friday for Monday, but apparently today they've issued the sixth effing patch to fix the bounty thing being hidden, which is the thing that glitched on my game.
Well, here's the thing, right?
Ludicrous.
I didn't get that glitch and I still didn't do it. You know what I mean? I still didn't do it, because once I was done, done, I was done. And that was the only outstanding thing I had to do in that game, because there's something about the journey that I'm on with this character or whoever it is in a game that I love so much. It's part of why I bubble with these games. It's part of why I concentrate on them so much and kind of block everything out, because it's that sense of mechanical escalation, like I mentioned. It's that sense of development in the character or you as a player, and that's all confined within the context of a story, so all the side missions are a part of that, and once that story's over, I almost feel like everything else is done, and I don't know really why, and I'm really interested to know if anyone else has that kind of drop in motivation when they hit that point, or whether that's another me thing. I don't know.
I'd be curious on that too. Mine is definitely the opposite, hilariously, because it's like, it's a Metroidvania thing. It's like, let me get my full tool belt, let me get my full range of abilities, and then I know I can explore everywhere, and I know that I won't just hit a random colored wall that I can't punch through because I haven't unlocked this specific type of fist yet or whatever it is. Jedi Survivor, when you mentioned that, is hilarious because that's one of the only games that made me want to mop everything up after the story, because fundamentally, once that stuff is taken care of in that world, like, there is an end game, and then Cal is just allowed to explore and mop everything else up, and it makes sense canonically because you are a Jedi looking after these areas, clearing out the rest of the Empire. So I love that motivation. That's why I was quadruply like so annoyed that I couldn't just do the bounties because their stupid game wasn't working. So like, apparently they've like finally patched it. But yeah, for me, it is almost that Metroidvania or Metroid style completion feeling where like there's nothing like in Metroid when you have a fully powered Samus and you're just blitzing around the levels because you know the environments and everything else. Like, I like that if a game plays into it. I think it's weird if we talk about a headcanon stuff where like, if a game gives you a save before the final mission and then they plug DLC in, it's like, okay, well, I guess on that story, my character was about to fight the final boss, but then went over here and did a bunch of other stuff and then came back and did the final boss.
This is it. Like, in my head, and I don't do this often for anything. I don't know why I do it for video games, but I think I role play a lot as the characters, even in non-role playing games. I like invent scenarios for them. I invent their journey through this experience, and I like it being one coherent thing. So when I do get those moments where it kicks you back before the final main mission or whatever to kind of finish side quests, in my head the character's journey is done, and that's for nothing. Like, for whatever reason, even in the most story-like games where I don't care about the story, kind of like Zelda, to be honest, my drive is to build that character up to be as powerful as possible before fighting the end boss, you know what I mean, to make that journey feel as complete as possible, so they're going into that final confrontation having finished everything, having gone through that journey, being this incredibly powerful character, and then culminating the story almost. It's always building to that kind of culmination in my own headcanon. And I don't know why, it's just a way that I've managed to really enjoy these games and kind of flow with these games. But it's interesting that obviously people have other headcanons like yourself, like yourself, where their story, you know, quote unquote, is different because you're like, oh, well, yeah, this character, of course, exists after that event happened. And they would obviously mop this up because they're encouraged to from a story perspective. My brain just doesn't latch on to that
always,
for whatever reason.
It's always case by case. And there aren't like rules for it. For me, it's just a feeling. Like the weirdest one that we had as the two of us was always Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Because that was one where like thematically or contextually, to me, it made sense that Jin Sakai would be dipping in and helping the smallest rung of person, like trying to help out the individual fisherman who was like having a couple of two people harassing him or whatever. I'll step in, I'm the dude who's like helping save the land or whatever, alongside the bigger fights against the Mongols and everything. But I like missed quite a few of those character deviations. It's like they don't even, it's like that tier of thing where it's like main quest, side quest that are character missions, and then those weird little question mark type ones that The Witcher helped popularize, where you can't just go somewhere and do a thing. I love the idea of Jin Sakai as the person sort of being like the Batman of Tsushima itself and just dipping in and helping people out when they least expect it. And doing that stuff. And it's not that I didn't do everything else, but my two main modes of approaching that game were the specific main story missions and then the little tiny question mark ones. And I missed a couple of, there's like a monk character that you sort of meet towards the end that I didn't do his stuff at all. Because at that point, in terms of the story pacing, it felt like the main stuff had kicked in so much that it didn't make any sense for Jin to go off and do all this other stuff.
I think for me, with open world games and RPGs especially, I always find those character quests way more interesting than the overall story. So I think that certainly helps.
I did in The Witcher.
In The Witcher, in like Mass Effect as well. You know, like those character stories are so interesting. And to me, they almost become the main thrust of the game. So I want to finish those before the regular main quest because they feel almost more important. And it's like, I that's the bulk of the game to me. And the main quest is just kind of closing that off almost. But yeah, with Ghost of Tsushima, that was a funny one because I couldn't naively couldn't comprehend you not doing those missions because to me, like I said, they were like the beating soul of that game. They were what made it so special.
The ones I did were phenomenal. I just didn't do every single one of them.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, and I was so pleased that you did. Like, you know, you understood and you did them, and we could bond over that and talk about it. But it's funny when you come out of a game and the stuff that you want to talk about isn't what someone else wants to talk about.
Yeah,
because games are so big and they're full of disparate parts, like we always mention, and you can latch on to one thing and completely ignore another thing if you want. Like, I hate the naval stuff in Assassin's Creed, but people obviously love it. And it's always funny and sometimes frustrating when you come out of a game and you loved this one thing so much and you think that was the heart and soul of it, and someone else is kind of like, it was
didn't
good,
even see that.
But didn't even see it, didn't even play it. And it's like, interesting, man. These games are created for so many different types of players, for so many different types of people, have so many through lines that you can be interested in or not. And I increasingly find that fascinating.
So for Resident Evil 4 as well, like, I could not care less about... I mean, I love the original Merchant. I hate the remake Merchant. Dude does not shut up. But I'm not bothered at all about all the shooting the medallions and killing the rats and doing all his stupid little side things. And that, like, shooting gallery thing that's, like, below him, that's not why I'm there at all.
Yeah.
Like, at all. That is anathema to why I'm there. So I've tried that stuff because I'll dip in and see what it is. But as soon as I realized, like, exactly what that was, I was like, this is not what I want from Resident Evil 4.
Right,
and I've
right.
just disconnected from that across the story. Like, every time I see him, and it's pretty frequently, every single one of those, like, check-in bit, it's just empty because I've not done any of those extra quests. Like,
yeah.
And he's always, I've got some new stuff. And I'm like, no, you don't. It's another crown and I don't need it. Leave me alone.
Oh, see, that's another good example because my first run through of Resi 4 when I did everything took me over 20 hours, I think, because I did it all. Mm-hmm. And some of the fondest memories I had from that experience were doing some of the side quest missions. Obviously not the medallions. The medallions were fine. I did them. I like the rewards from
they're
them.
They're satisfying to shoot.
They're satisfying to shoot. They're satisfying to hunt down. But it was the moments where you had to go fight this dangerous enemy. And there's a cool moment with a knight underground, like a golden knight. That's actually in the original game and is repurposed here as like this sub-boss. And I remember being so thrilled by that. But like, a bunch of players might miss it.
I'm never going to see it.
You're
I mean, I might later in the year, but yeah.
Yeah, and I just always think it's fun to see what you gravitate towards. I'll always remember we had the discussion when The Last of Us Part 2 came out, and I played it first for review. So when you were going through it, I was eager to see what you thought of certain things. And it's funny to see what people message you about and what they don't. I remember we talked about like a really minor thing towards the beginning when you're exploring Seattle and you go down into the bank and there's a whole story about these bank robbers who got trapped in the vault on outbreak day and they didn't know what was going on and they're still down there. And I thought that story was so cool.
Yeah.
And I remember messaging you and you were like, whoop. Whoop. And I was like, you know what? That's crazy to me at the time, but I increasingly get it because I realized that there's no one right way to play a game at all.
No, see, I remember, I thought I did see that. I mean, I remember reacting to that stuff, but maybe it was on like a second playthrough or something. Maybe it wasn't the first time through.
We talked about it when you replayed it.
Okay? Right.
Like, okay. I think it was like last year or the year before, and then you kind of went through and did that bit more thoroughly, I think, and we talked about it.
Yeah, that's what it
then was,
because the first time through, I was like, they had that sort of semi-open world stuff, and I was just so, because of what happens just before that sequence, that area, I just wanted more story stuff. That was something where the main stuff, I was like 100% focused on, and the game was like, oh, we've got all these other things. Shut up, I'm not doing that at all. I'm doing your main thing, because that is why I'm here. But yeah, when I went back through it and then combed everything, it was like, oh, there's way more detail in that area. Another one that was just recently, I'm not going to do specifics, but Dredge, the way that game wraps up, and one of its endings is contingent on finding something in the open world. And I just did, well, I did, but I found it out of order. So it didn't fully trigger in the right way. And then, so I got a different ending. And then I had to go online because it felt really unsatisfying. And it was like, oh, actually, no, if you go back to this place that I had been to, but at a different point in the story, you'll get a different thing and that triggers the final ending. And I hated that with a passion, but at the same time, that it worked totally well for you.
Absolutely. And we've actually had that twice this year. We had it with Dredge and we recently had it in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
You completely skipped a quest that took me about an hour to complete because we just entered the end game completely differently. Like, no spoilers, but in the end game of Tears of the Kingdom, you have a few roadblocks where the game just says you have to go out and find
Items checks.
Item checks, but they don't really tell you where it is. You have to search down clues. You have to do some other side missions to get there. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the way I was playing it in that kind of completionist zone, I'd found all of those things before I got to that zone. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to the character and they're like, oh, you need to go find this thing. And then they're like, what? You've got the thing on you. Oh, you know the knowledge. And they did that like three times, but I know you had a different experience.
Well, mine was like,
like more of a roadblock.
Yeah, I had that. There was one specific thing where it was like, oh, you've already got this. But there's another thing where, there was just the way some of the cuts, I'm being vague as hell, but some of the way the cutscenes rolled out, I'd already done the thing that they were talking about doing in the cutscene. And it was very obvious that I'd done that thing, but the game didn't acknowledge it. And that just felt really weird. This has been a couple of patches for Tears of the Kingdom, so it might have been sorted, and that might have been a pre-release thing, but that was just one thing towards the end of the game where they need to sort of, like, if that whole game is one giant like diamond shape, they need to bring you back in towards the next point. And the only way to do that, which is really inelegant considering how kind of whimsical and beautiful the rest of that game is just like, have you got the thing yet? Yeah. Okay, well, it's out there somewhere, so go find it. And I thought that sucked.
It's kind of funny, man, because I liked it, but I didn't get to experience it, and that's where my kind of completionist approach sort of broke down, because I thought those were great quests when I did them, and I love that the game gave me the ability and the freedom to find them way before I got to that end game. But I thought about how cool it would have been and how maybe better paced in a way the game would have been if I got to that moment and I didn't know where one of the things was and I needed to spend another 5 hours in the game.
That's what I hate is
hunting down side quests, because it would have, for me, expanded the game almost, because in my experience, and maybe you would have loved this, I don't know, like, the final stretch was so narrow, but it was so long and it was so narrow. It got to the point where after I did the final temple, it was just like, he's a linear thing, he's a linear thing, he's a linear thing, he's a linear thing, and they were all good, but because I had the in-between parts that would have expanded them or stretched them out a little bit more, I kind of felt like it was strangely paced, because it felt like it was wrapping up and then it wasn't, then it felt like it was wrapping up, then it wasn't, and that was my fault, because I almost broke it by having everything beforehand, but... it makes you think there's no ideal way to go through a video game, Scott.
It's hard. I think that it's on them to sort of like decide how they want to roadblock people or how they want to item check you or whatever it is. For me, it's always like, give me a vague goal or a vague direction and tell me the main thing I'm doing is in that direction, and I'll deviate and do whatever I want to get to that point, context permitting or whatever it is. But when you just tell me like, hey, we need something and it's somewhere in the open world, have fun. That's a needle in a haystack. Like, I do need something. You need to tell me some direction or something. I always hate that. And I find that's like quite a, it's not cheap, but I find that like a empty way to elongate runtime, because I'm just stumbling around, and I hate the depths in that game. Because I'm just stumbling around hoping to find something of purpose. Oh, it's more darkness. It wasn't, none of that stuff was for me. But yeah, clearly we have a lot of different back and forths that we can delve back into. I have a few other pointers on here that we didn't get to, so we might do another version of this in the future.
If people like it, I hope it wasn't too indulgent.
it's got to be done. This is the wind up. And plus, right now, there's hardly any gaming news going on, although we are pre-recording this on Friday, so maybe Xbox will buy Sony on Sunday, and then we'll...
We will
react to that later in the week. But yeah, come find us on social media. Let us know what you think of your various gaming habits. And if you agree or disagree with the Big Dip life and playing demos
genuinely,
and getting lost in marketing.
Genuinely want to know, because I don't know how, if anyone is anywhere near the same way, on the same wavelength as me or you. I don't know. Maybe even in the between. Maybe you're a nice amalgamation of both of our styles. I don't know. I want to know, though. I really do.
Yeah, get in touch with us. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you throughout the week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.